Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
We've all been excited by a new product or service to only later be hit with unexpected associated costs. When opportunity, novelty, and variable pricing meet, the results can be financially painful. As artificial intelligence has moved from predictive to generative to mainstream, some CEOs and CFOs have experienced shockingly high costs for this new tool. Identifying and managing the costs of generative AI, next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Hugo Juan. Hugo is an expert in cloud computing and business models. He's worked for both Canonical and Google. Hugo holds an MBA from the MIT Sloan School of Business, and he is going to guide us through Gen AI considerations. Hugo Juan, welcome to Sound Practice.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
Very excited to be talking to you. And for our audience today, we're going to be talking about an article of yours that appeared in the Harvard Business Review. And the title of that article is What CEOs Need to Know About the Costs of Adopting Gen AI. And this was also provided to members of the American Association for Physician Leadership, which is the host of this podcast. And we're very excited to talk to you today about an important topic. So first, you have to walk me through, what is Gen or generative AI?
Well, before I answer this question, I would like to address a little bit, I share a little bit of correct some information. I'm not working for Google. Basically, my company working for Google. We as a vendor, we provided some infrastructure technology for Google's cloud business. So that's how we as a group working for Google. So Canonical is the company I'm working for.
Excellent. Thank you.
So to answer your question about what is generative AI, so in most of cases, people like to compare the current development of AI to the previous generation of the, another excitement of the AI development, which we now most time refer to predictive AI. Means we use a algorithm, it's also an AI model, to predict what is exactly what the machine can read from. In many cases, in the visual case, when a machine or camera capture a picture of the cat or dog, then the algorithm can understand, wow, this is a dog, this is not a cat. So it can output, it can help without any human guidance. They can just tell this is the whether this is the object that you want to search for. So that is the previous generation we call predictive AI. Currently, we are more excited on the generative AI or Gen AI. So the difference is that generative AI, as you said, it can generate something. So what can it generate? In the most of case, what we talk most about the large language model, it's based on language. You give them an input, basically talking with a person, give a couple of words, a few sentences, and then the model can generate something that may like to respond to you or may like to complete your sentence. So basically, you feel a sense that talking with a real person. And the persona of this person may depends on the setting you want to. Maybe this could be your coach, could be a teacher. So there's many other ways to configure the model, make sure you make it work in the way you like it to.
So in your article, you open by noting that some companies are actually pulling away from cloud migration because of unexpected cost pressures. Why do so many CEOs underestimate the true price tag of generative AI. Is it a misunderstanding of the technology, or are the billing and usage models simply just that complex?
I think in I will share a case later, but before that, I think in we could say 70% of the cases are, you know, like the full life cycle consideration. So as a AI application, it's not like you buy a physical machine, this is a tool that you have a fixed cost, and you have the maintenance cost for that machine. It's not really like that. AI is more kind of a, you know, when we talk about AI is not actually a program. It's more kind of a process of dealing with data. So you never have a clear estimation of how much data you need to process. I think that's 2 or 3 weeks ago. There's a very popular case, acquisition between Meta and a startup called Matus. Meta spent more than $2 billion on this small startup. So what they do, what this company did to make it Meta so excited about it, actually what they did is making many of their users so worried about the cost. So, you know, from their financial data, it's very looks very promising. In just in 9 months, this company started from launching the product and reaching the 100 million revenue for the year, for the recurring revenue for the year. So that's amazing for any of the startup, just 9 months. And people are excited to realize many their enterprise customers paying, you know, thousands of dollars per person for the subscription of their service. So what do they do? So basically they, you know, like if we are talking to a ChatGPT or Google Gemini, basically you just input a sentence, and the language model will, based on your sentence, output the appropriate content for you. That's like we call it a one-off situation. So just the one conversation you ask and the response. But Meta's data is quite different. They are running on an agent business. Suppose I as a user can ask, hey, Manus, could you help me to research all the startups that Y Combinator just in their last batch? Yeah, Manus will do that. They will assign multiple agents to different jobs. So some of the agents will just scratch all the website of the Y Combinator. The other will, based on this list, to research there any public information of those startups. So it's like a, you know, back and forth information exchange. So you do not really know how many token you consume, how many information you get fed to those multiple agents. Then when you get the bill, you could get so surprised. Wow, how much I used? You didn't know that. I just asked one sentence. How could that one sentence, one request cost me maybe, you know, like $100. You probably never think about that. So that makes this business unpredictable. So if as a CEO, like say, oh, we have to run a project about AI, so in the future, all our employees have to use this AI tool or use these AI agents and make sure they consume the latest and the greatest model, which would be the most expensive model. And you're very surprised what you'll find by the end of the month or maybe, you know, the year. So that's why it's unpredictable. So you have to have the full life cycle sense of how much you will consume.
In your article, you describe a client who invested heavily in CPUs, but ran into a bandwidth bottleneck that made the system inefficient. Can you walk us through that example? Why isn't it enough for a company just to buy fast chips? And what hidden infrastructure costs do leaders commonly miss?
Yeah, I can walk through the real case and another metaphor about what exactly will happen to a normal person. So the case is that the company actually is a real customer with Google, and we work together to serve that customer. The customer purchased a lot of NVIDIA GPUs put it in one of the Google data center. But unfortunately, when they cluster all the computers together, like multiple GPUs, then the GPU, when the GPU finished processing the data, they have to feed back to the, through the CPU. And that's the CPU talk to the other CPU. And that CPU, channel the data to the GPUs of that machine. So one machine can only have one CPU. But it can have multiple GPUs. So that means there's a bottleneck between between CPUs. But unfortunately, when they cluster multiple machines, multiple CPUs together, the GPU to GPU connection always rely on the CPU. So you have to solve that problem. Otherwise, no matter how many GPU you add to that CPU, it can be fast for that single machine, but it cannot fast for the whole cluster. So you will still have this problem. So just like you have a very good car, you have very powerful engine, but your brake doesn't work. Oh yeah, just very weak. What you can do? You cannot run that fast, right? So you should consider how much you can force the pedal to stop the car. So that's the real issue. Not only CEO, but also IT managers and other who actually handle the situation need to consider.
Very, very interesting. You also write that generative AI shifts organizations from a traditional talent pyramid to more of a diamond structure. What does that mean for CEOs' hiring strategies?
Well, that's really a very exciting topic these days. And probably you heard of that we call it one-man company. So there are many startups, they didn't design for hiring, thousands, hundred thousand people. They just will continue to be one founder and with multiple agents work for this person. So when we talk about the diamond-shaped organization, we were thinking about the workforce in the future. So with AI have the capability to replace some of the junior works. We probably not replace the employees, the person entirely. Probably we can think of that. The actually get replaced are those type of jobs, those type of tasks. So you probably have someone who can do the work by himself or herself, but also who can also monitor multiple agents to do the same job. So in the past, you have a one IC, individual contributor, can do the work for him or herself. But in the future, this person can still be an individual contributor in your organization chart, but in the same time, this person can manage maybe 100 agents to do the job previously required his or her manager, a team to do. So that we call it diamond. So you will see in the future, we still need some individual contributors, like some jobs cannot be replaced by agents. So we will see the middle layer get kind of bigger and bigger because many people get promoted, not because they're hiring new people, just because their skill can just to, you know, manage more tasks, more complicated tasks, and they have more bandwidth to think strategically, to think more important, you know, tasks they previously required their manager to handle. So we have the much stronger middle layer, and to the top layer, stay the same, I assume, but maybe sometimes will change if your CEO can, you know, directly use so many agents by himself or herself, who knows. But anyway, to the bottom layer, we will see, you know, we don't actually need so many junior, you know, graduates to do the perform the very basic jobs.
Do you think that organizations will gravitate towards that diamond shape over time, or do you think it will be an implemented strategy? I just wonder if there's enough employees now that are sufficient skills to enter into a diamond shape model. Is this going to take time to evolve, or do you think it's a competitive advantage to someone to try to put that into place sooner rather than later?
Well, as we see, from the early 90s, we called the Earth is flat, right? That time we consider, you know, you can outsource any kind of work to somewhere cheaper. But we didn't see that it happened dramatically. But we still see that's the trend. And still these days, we still see some, you know, big company outsource their workforce to somewhere. I think that's an option, as long as you can get a benefit. I think to compare with an agent with a real person, there definitely be some advantages, like they always be loyal, like they always be friendly. If you ask a ChatGPT, can you accuse me of something? I guess it will refuse. it will continue flattering you. But there's other, you know, it's always pros and cons. So you. People are very good at strategic thinking. We can think out of box, but the agent may have some constraints. You know, I recently read an article from the MIT Tech Review. So it says it was very surprising the current large language model are so powerful, they can solve some unsolved math problems. So people are start to think about whether we need so many mathematicians. Are they actually useful? But when people are actually looking at those we assume unsolved problems, actually those questions are solved by someone, but not well documented. It's not published in the way that everyone knows. So the model is just very good at find something. They are not good at solve or to drive innovation based on, you know, the current information. They are very good at to find where we already solve the problem. So it has its advantage. And people always have our advantage. We shouldn't, you know, when I think that's a kind of dilemma, and people argue so much about whether AI will replace us. I think as a person, myself, I think, you know, as long as I can learn some of the AI tools, how can, you know, I will be at least, you know, for the next couple of years, I can make use of that, not be afraid, you know, in the long term, well, what should I do? that's my philosophy.
Well, I think that's a good philosophy. In your article, you argue that security and ethics are not just governance issues, that they're major cost centers if neglected. Between shadow IT, data leakage, and model bias, where do you see companies losing the most money when they cut corners on responsible AI?
Well, we have recently done another research to see what are, basically we surveyed the executives and the decision makers in large enterprises to they they think about shadow IT. In the most cases, shadow IT could be the most concern. But it actually depends, though. I mean, the survey is only about people's opinion. It's not about facts. So when you look at the shadow IT, it's basically give you a, you know, especially give the managers, the leadership, a uncertainty. What are they using? You know, are they using ChatGPT or are they using Gemini? If my company does not have a contract with Gemini, with Google, are they feeding some data, my confidential data, to Gemini? So Gemini knows what my secret, you know, my confidential business secrets. So that's part of the risk of shadow IT. And when we talk about cost of bias, the bias doesn't, you know, make you feel lose something at the beginning. But when you actually sense that, when you actually find that you have the bias model, you have the bias, you know, decision chain for a long time, it's too late to remediate. You already made a lot of mistakes. So it's very hard to say that which one you should avoid. You should have a priority. I think that's about security. It's always be a list. It's a compliance list. You have to check all the time. Am I compliant enough? Is there any risk some, you know, bad actors could come into my floor to do something I didn't notice? So that it's you. I feel like you know, it's more kind of the not just the moral sense. It's about a wisdom of running a business. Rely on someone really care about the business to pay attention to the works, to the current situations, current usage of different tools. That some people, you know, not necessarily to be full time, but also at least they have their KPI, they have their responsibilities to manage this kind of stuff and pay for that, obviously.
I was very interested in your discussion of generative AI cost dashboard for CEOs. I thought this was a great idea. And if you could talk a little bit about it, if a CEO sat down with you next week and opened up this dashboard that you're discussing, what are the top three metrics that should be on that dashboard?
Well, we talk about, you know, the generative AI cost, the Manus case, it's very hard to predict. Everyone hope they're sitting in front of dashboard, like driving a car. You know, you turn the wheel, the car turn itself. you do not want, but actually for the AI, and not only AI, but for the IT system, it responds slow. It's not always be as punctual or as direct feedback to you, most of the human societies. So it's very hard, but it doesn't say that we cannot do anything. Many big companies, especially, you know, we all know about Salesforce. So a dashboard about ourselves is very, very important for the business leaders to have a good sense of how business will go. But in actual, I truly believe those percentage of the close rate, deal close rate, are accurate all the time? Probably not. But but with a dashboard, you can rely on this. So for generative AI, for an enterprise AI system, it's the same. If you have set up some metrics, for example, how many virtual machines have been started this today? How big it is that? How much I'm paying the cloud? But because that's real time. So you can have an estimation, or based on the consumption today, I can estimate tomorrow how much would it be. And there's other ways, to comparing different costs. We know some model are are metered by ChatGPT, like OpenAI APIs. Mm-hmm. You have to pay real time. How many tokens you consume, you have to pay how much. But there are other models like DeepSeek, like Llama. They can install in a specific machine, be local, and don't even talk with the internet. So you can still ask their question. They can have some genuine answers, not as good as the latest model when that is the GPT-5, but still it works in some ways. So if you have a better sense of that, you can have a strategy. Oh, I understand. Okay, those are models to answer very basic questions. They are in my virtual machine. The virtual machine is there. The machine is there. It's running every day. So if today it costs $1, tomorrow it will cost $1 as well. Mm-hmm. Then I know, okay, that's one of my dashboards. The other dashboard, okay, those are, you know, very innovative problems. We need some scientists. We need some, you know, very critical customers to engage with these models to feed the new data. Then we know, but we know it's unpredictable. But we should make sure this kind of model in a limited scope. We should say, okay, or we set a limit. Say, okay, maybe 2,000 or 10,000 tokens per conversation. We have a limit. We will understand, okay, you couldn't every second you feed 10,000 tokens. It's not possible. So you have a bound of how much it will cost. So you have better sense in that case. So you separate the dashboard and you have at least the worst case and the best case, you will see how much it goes in the future.
Very, very interesting. Is our time together comes to a conclusion. I'm interested if you could give one piece of advice to the leader out there who's afraid of the cost of generative AI, but at the same time is also afraid of being left behind. What's the sweet spot strategy for getting started safely while still keeping pace with innovation?
Well, maybe I cannot give a very good advice, but I can give a warning. If you do not, if you fear missing out, if you do not try, you're always missing this trend, always missing something you should do. But if you try, you pay attention to the worst case. In that case, you will understand how much you can learn better, get more and more prepared.
Sound advice. Thank you very much. If members of our audience today are interested in connecting with you, how may they reach you?
Well, you can just search my name, Hugo Huang, in LinkedIn, or you can just reach out to Chronicle. Chronicle.com or Ubuntu.com. Ubuntu is our product. It's very famous. You know, everyone in the AI world. Ubuntu.com. Ubuntu.com is a way you find our company and to know our product.
Brilliant. We'll put that in the show notes for those of you that may be driving at the moment and can't make a note of it. Hugo Huang, thank you so much for being on Sound Practice.
Thank you, Mike.
My thanks to Hugo Huang for his time and expertise. His article in the Harvard Business Review gives fair notice of the costs of generative AI in the workplace. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Had his holy cow.
Batman and Robin, Rick and Kapow.